Hello and welcome to Marketing Beats, Marketing Bites, your go-to podcast for the latest news and views from some of the top names across the marketing and advertising sectors. It's firmly on the pulse of what marketers are really thinking, but rarely saying out loud. This week, we'll be taking a deep dive into how creativity is coming under more pressure than ever before. My name is Tom West, and I'm a senior journalist at Marketing Beats, and I'm very happy to say that I'm being joined today by Flora Food Group's UK Marketing Director, Ian Hepburn, and Seltzer's VP of Global Customer Success, Natalie Stamoulatos, to discuss why creativity needs to be enshrined at all costs and how best to go about protecting it. According to Seltzer's latest white paper, as much as 70% of campaign performance is tied to creative quality. Why then is the industry not systematically prioritising the optimisation of creative production? With much of the original creative nucleus often lost in the sands of the various permutations of omnichannel campaigns, how can marketers ensure that the all-important big idea isn't eroded by the necessities of multi-format adaptations? With the help of companies like Seltzer, marketers are increasingly turning to automation to both enhance and protect their creative work. Technological advances in recent years have proved to be an absolute game changer, and myriad assets can now be seamlessly adapted for a campaign at the touch of a button. Will more faithful omnichannel representations of a creative idea help marketers fight perhaps one of their biggest challenges? Ad fatigue. To get things started, I'd love to hear your thoughts on why is creativity coming under pressure now more than ever, and how can marketers push back against it?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there's some well-known challenges that we face, right? So budgets generally are coming under pressure, not just total budgets, but also the split between working and non-working media, right? So, you know, we don't want to be spending any more than we have to on creating assets and creating content. At the same time, you know, again, a well-known challenge, there's the classic balance between performance marketing and long-term brand building. And I think wrongly, sometimes performance marketing is felt to be require less creativity and less investment in terms of the time to make that still cut through and be creative. So those would be some of my initial thoughts for sure.
Yeah, I think what I would add there is now more than ever, we see that advertisers, especially large enterprise companies, they're struggling to deliver great creative at scale, right? Because you're dealing with how many ad formats you need in a growing landscape of digital media and various platforms. You're then having to think about how you personalize that advertising to break through all the noise and you know, to Ian's point, also be effective and think about it from a performance angle. And then, you know, there is that concept of continuously testing, right? Continuously needing to test to maximize that performance. And I think when you take into account all of those variables, but then think about the fact that actually, I think it was Campaign that had a quote that there was 70% of campaign performance is actually driven by creative. So when you think about that as a stat in itself, you really want to protect that creative while you obviously have to deliver, you know, across that landscape.
I expect that stat is actually increasing over time as well, that 70% stat, because, you know, media platforms are getting ever more saturated. So, you know, you've got to be even more creative to cut through.
Yeah, interestingly, something we always talk about at Seltzer with our clients is kind of how vanilla digital advertising can sometimes look, right? Because you're dealing with kind of that confined space, you know, whether it's open web or, of course, there's like then the social media, but how do you stop kind of someone scrolling as ever now? And to exactly that point, Ian, it's like, how do you cut through? And that's very much kind of where we like to think that we are offering the opportunity for clients to actually be more effective by making personalization a lot easier, making it a lot easier for them to deliver against.
And I think we could also say that as well as that need to cut through the time that you've got available to do it, I mean, there are certain, obviously, digital platforms and digital, you know, media consumption modes that people are in where you've literally just got 2 or 3 seconds to have any chance of cutting through. So you've got to grab attention, you know, get product, logo, brand somehow established in those first 3 seconds as well, even if you think you've got 6 or 10 seconds to engage and create and create impact, you've probably only got 3, depending on the platform. So yes, you've got the creative challenge plus the time challenge of how you demonstrate that creativity and engage people.
Pretty scary when it boils down to those seconds.
It is.
So how vital is it to translate the original heartbeat of the creative idea across all different assets? So obviously you've mentioned that it can be quite difficult if you're going across social media, digital, online, all different formats. How do you preserve this and how do you guys go about it?
To answer your question, Tom, I would say it's totally vital, right? You've got to keep that core idea and creative concept while you kind of create all the assets. I would say that the thing you don't want, because it is where you drill down into your performance marketing, is you don't want to dilute that creative concept as you go further down the funnel. Fundamentally, I think retaining that core creative idea as much as you can is where you're going to also be able to drive that effectiveness.
I completely agree with Natalie. And I think there's two things that we always consider here. What's at the core of the creative idea? And I'll talk a little bit more about that, because sometimes, well, often you are learning that actually as you go, even once you've launched a campaign. But there's also the need to be obviously digital first. So you've got to translate that creative idea into digital first assets. You know, it's not just a case of translating the creative idea and hoping for the best. You know, you have to take on board everything you know about the digital environment and the audiences that you're looking to engage. We've certainly found Flora Food Group that you can learn a lot once you've launched an idea in terms of what really is at the core of the idea. So, you know, on Skip the Cow, for example, there are certain executions of that and assets that we originally launched with that we thought were spot on. We thought they really were at the core of the idea. But through A/B testing and, you know, some of the work we've done on better understanding our audiences and building more effective audiences, we've actually realized that some of those early assets weren't actually what was really at the core of the idea. And maybe, you know, certainly we've learned that you've got to be very careful in terms of how you might imply criticism of people's current behavior, right? So we learned that quite early on, actually, but we didn't go into that being crystal clear. So that's the benefit of having A/B tests as well, to help you really sharpen what that idea is, so that then, yes, as you then translate that across all different assets, you're constantly building that sharp view of what the core of the idea is.
Yeah, actually, if I can build on that, Ian, because what we do find is a lot of our clients, they're not just using creative automation for the initial build, but exactly for that test and learn and getting to market faster. You know, you talk about time of the essence in terms of having that time for an ad to register, but then you will as quickly learn from the performance of how that ad is doing, and you want to be able to go to market just as quickly. And I think that's where creative automation really also comes into its own, because it's about that speed to adapt all of those variants and versions of creative to be able to kind of put that learning back into the market as quickly as possible, because you're obviously running a campaign in a certain time frame, etc. You know, not everything is always on or evergreen, at which point you really want to be able to harness those learnings and act on them. At the beginning, we may have thought there was a lot more value in that initial just inception of creative build. We are actually finding that we need to deliver value all the way through, and even after a campaign is launched, it certainly doesn't end there.
So you've touched on this importance of delivering value throughout the campaign. And as we know, the economic landscape in marketing advertising has been quite fraught, quite difficult, especially post-COVID. How much of a game changer is creative automation going to be?
From our perspective, and I guess it's an obvious one, being a creative automation software provider, you know, we believe it's the only way to do any of this. You absolutely have to harness the power of technology. Without it, I don't know how any brand is really meant to do everything it needs to do in market. And that's kind of the crux of it. When I think about how we can deliver for some of our clients 10 times more efficiency and actually getting to market 5 times faster, those aren't menial sort of numbers, right? We are actually massively improving how they can do what they need to do. And we know that because of those things, yeah, they're ultimately reducing costs, a point that Ian touched on early on. We have a ride-hailing client. They are a global client, so they got, you know, they operate in 46 countries. When you then look at the number of cities they need to deliver creative for, that's over 700 plus cities. So they're using creative automation to actually create those 40 plus templates and all the versions in terms of geolocation and language and even market nuance. And you wouldn't be able to do that without harnessing technology. So I absolutely think it is a game changer, but it's also a necessary one. I don't know how anyone's doing it the old school way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. We're starting to use it, but I think we can use it a lot more going forwards for sure, because let's think about target audiences, right? For example, you can have a template, and then clearly, if you're talking to an audience of foodies or an audience of keen bakers, or you're talking to an audience of eco-actives, you're going to want to tailor your creative and optimize the creative to speak to them, right? So one of the assets that performed really well for us is we showed two cakes. One had been made with a dairy butter, one had been made with flora butter, and it was a spot the difference, and it performed really well, right? But that was exactly that, tailored for a baking, food-loving audience. If you're looking at an eco-active audience, you might lead with something different. You might talk about the lower climate impact, but it still has to come from the same campaign look and feel. It still has to be noticeably from flora. And I think there's things that we haven't even started to look at properly yet around relevance and topicality. You know, how can you use creative automation sort of almost instantaneously to serve an ad that is relevant to a news item that might have happened that day, or a cultural event that's happening that week or at that time. And you know, I think that there are the more I think about it, I think there are so many ways in which this is a game changer for sure.
How big a role does AI play in the creative automation process?
When we want to think of AI and the role that it can play for our clients, it is much more about amplification and learning and doing things quicker. It isn't about completely replacing the entire process. And I think that's where maybe some people thought it might come in. But, you know, that there's brand integrity and there's a need for differentiation in the market. And I don't think that you can just open that up entirely.
This may not be a point about AI, actually, but I think what creative automation also allows us to do, or should enable us to do, is avoid, I guess, some of the pitfalls that we've all sometimes fallen into around just, you know, making sure you've got the correct pack shot, that you've got the correct text. There are no, you know, the brand visual world is correct, the copy is correct. All of those elements that we've probably all in our back catalogue got one or two mistakes where you think, well, that was the wrong pack shot, or we included an old copy line that we'd said didn't work, or, you know. And I think, again, automation, and maybe with the help of AI, if that can remove that risk entirely, that's probably removing quite a lot of work that currently exists in the system, right? In terms of checking copy, checking pack shots, is that definitely the latest pack shot? So on a practical level as well as creative level, there's effectiveness and efficiency that we can get out of automation and AI.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, one of the first bits of AI that we implemented was translation, because that was a no-brainer, right? Our software works in almost a modular fashion. So if you like a massive spreadsheet where you would have all your pack shots lined up with kind of all of your headlines associated, and then all of and any additional copy, and of course your logo and whatnot. And that was almost one of the most straightforward. You would click a button, the AI button, against that copy, and it would auto-populate that entire feed with all of your languages. And when you think about the language that it's harnessing in order to do the most accurate translation, that is going to be a lot better than where we were before.
I'd like to circle back, if we can, to this idea of pressure and economic and time constraints that are placed on creative ideas. As I'm sure you guys know, creative ideas are at the most vulnerable, especially in the early stages. How can marketers ensure that they are not killed off or altered by these pressures, and, you know, pressures especially from up above within the brand and agency worlds, and that the core message essentially sees the light of day and is unadulterated?
I think this is absolutely key, and I think it's probably one of the single biggest responsibilities that we have as marketeers, is to nurture and care for ideas when they're in their early stages. I guess if I think back to successful creative campaigns that I've been fortunate to be involved in, I think what really helps is right from the start, the client and agency having a shared ambition to do something different. And I think taking time to agree that shared ambition is always time well spent rather than leaping straight into a brief. You know, what are we actually looking to do that's going to really make a difference, right? Really cut through. And I think also at that very early stage, doing two other things. The first one is to have a mindset, which is actually the prudent thing to do is to feel uncomfortable when you're seeing a creative idea. That's prudent. You know, be bold, right? The brave thing to do is actually just to go with something conventional, because that's probably also not going to work, right? So it's not going to cut through. So have a mindset that actually we're doing the right thing and we're being prudent if we feel uncomfortable in the early stages, and we go on that journey together. I think the second point that I think is critical is to anticipate the hurdles that you think you might face with the idea and discuss those openly early on, and agree how you're going to navigate those. So how are you going to work together as a client and agency team, work together to get to yes? So those are things that when I think about what's worked, and when I've been part of a creative process that's worked, typically we have done those things, and it's certainly helped us.
I wholeheartedly agree with everything that you've said. And Ian, I'm sure you're a much loved client to your creative agencies because of that as well. I'm absolutely certain of it. What I would just like to add actually is I think the lens in which we view the world is more through the implementation, right? So it's where Ian's very much correctly talking about that core creative idea. We actually would further pressure test that in thinking about your creative outputs with your media strategy in order to get those creative results, right? So how do you get that alignment between kind of the marketing objectives, your creative output, and your media strategy, and really ensure that you are spending the almost, I guess, in our view, when you are implementing a campaign that isn't just in a single market, but you want that campaign to withstand that brand integrity, brand consistency, and creative execution across several markets and languages. And then, of course, with all the variations thereafter in terms of that testing and learning in each market, that's where the pressure test really comes in. And I think, again, that's where creative automation is a real help to that. It's allowing you not to have to spend time and money on creating all of those variants. That's the automation bit. It creates all those versions for you. But what it does allow you to do is get this all-encompassing view where you can actually ensure that there is that brand consistency. You're safeguarding the idea, and you're putting your time into safeguarding it as opposed to making it, right? And I think that still plays equally an important role in ensuring that the creative idea doesn't get killed at any point.
I think that is spot on, Natalie. And I think because of those, you know, the technology that now exists and the ability to do, you know, easily do A-B testing, is you don't have to bet everything all at once, right? So, you know, those days that were honestly the case early in my career, where you would be essentially making a TV ad and potentially spending an awful lot of money on the production and those famous sort of lovely 3-day shoots that we used to go on. It's a huge bet. You know, even if you've done a bit of pre-testing, you know, that there's a big non-working cost that you've had. You're then just betting that it's going to work. You don't have to bet everything all at once here. So you can take a bold creative idea, you can give it oxygen and allow it to breathe in the real world, and then optimize it as you go. So I think that's spot on. I think it makes a big difference as well.
And I think add to that, not just the optimization piece, but when you're running something for long enough, you're dealing with ad fatigue, right, as well, at which point you want to keep, again, that core creative integrity, but you want to be able to change it up and, again, be able to create more versions and really squeeze everything you can out of those creative assets that you've first invested in to really make the most out of it and ensure that you can keep running your campaign, but without concern around ad fatigue. But still, of course, that optimization will come into that piece as well. It's an infinity sort of cycle as opposed to a start and end point nowadays, I would say.
I wanted to pick out something that you mentioned, Ian, this idea of being bold, and creative ideas need to take you out of your comfort zone to a certain extent, otherwise they're not going to make an impact. Do you agree? Do you agree that great creative ideas need to take you out of your comfort zone if they are going to last, going to make an impact and cut through? And I believe, Ian, that you worked on When You're Hungry, for example, which is quite an iconic campaign, which when it came out, very, very different to anything that had come before, and Skip the Cow as well, I believe.
I can't take the credit for You're Not You When You're Hungry at all, but I was lucky enough to be at Mars at the time that we launched that, and for a period of time looking after the Snickers brand as well. And there are, interestingly, when I was just sort of going back through you know, what works about You're Not You When You're Hungry and also what works about Skip the Cow, I was actually struck by the number of similarities there are. With both of those, there was a start point where fundamentally, as I've said, you know, the agency and client started with an ambition to do something different, right? And also had, I think, some important disciplines in place at the start. So the laws of growth being front and center of mind. So, you know, as we know, memories are fragile, brands are substitutable, and household penetration is king. So, you know, unless you're doing something that's going to get remembered, there are other brands out there that in the vast majority of categories, people can very happily substitute your brand for another one. So you have to be remembered and you have to cut through. And critically, this was the case on You're Not You When You're Hungry, and is definitely the case on Skip the Cow, is don't be niche. And I'll explain what I mean by that. I think if I take Skip the Cow, so the future of plant-based for us is you can't behave as if you're a niche. You have to behave with confidence in the mainstream world of food, right? And so for Flora, we're for everyone that enjoys the taste and versatility of butter. But we also believe very strongly that things have to change, you know, and brands must play a role. And you can't act niche. You have to act with confidence. You have to provide that, the confidence, a bit of provocation and a call to action. The same, I think, was also true with Snickers and You're Not You When You're Hungry. Don't be niche. So the insight has universal meaning, right? So Snickers before that campaign, I think, was much more as a sort of, you know, the creative platform was much more of a laddish platform. It was probably talking much more overtly to sort of young male audience, whereas You're Not You When You're Hungry has universal meaning. So yes, it still appeals to that audience, but everyone can identify with it. And that was a core part of why that has been such a successful campaign. And it's a core reason why Skip the Cow has also been successful. You know, it gives us that platform, a confidence with humor to play in a mainstream world where people are going to notice you, and you're going to be distinctive and drive salience.
Yeah, actually, Ian, I'm going to just build on the point you made, because I was thinking about both of those campaigns further to our earlier chat. And I think what you've touched on there is when you think about universal meaning, but also equally the ability in within that to be able to create relevance to different audience groups as well, and almost personalization, but not making it niche. Because, you know, even with Flora and Skip the Cow, you've referenced an audience around bakers or those that are more eco-conscious. And immediately you've got a universal meaning and kind of idea behind Skip the Cow that everyone will very quickly make their own sort of alliance with. But then you have that ability to drive that concept to in a more personalized fashion, which I think, again, even gets further cut through and gets remembered, to your point as well. And that's where I think we often talk about great creative ideas having legs, right? And that's really when you can really torture test that, and you really understand where it has legs. Because even in that Snickers campaign of You're Not You When You're Hungry, I remember specifically, and I might get this slightly wrong because it was obviously years ago, but where you kind of type incorrectly when you're hungry. And I just thought that is 100% me. And I never really gave it much more thought than that. But I just, you know, all these years later, to still remember something that resonated to that degree with me, I think is, for me, is absolutely brilliant marketing.
So much of this is confidence in the idea that you've got and in the position that you've got, right? And we talk about this on Skip the Cow. You can only skip things you don't need, and you don't need dairy. Right. We've got products that taste, cook and bake, just as well as cow butter. Right. You need that confidence at the heart of it. And I think, I think that then translates into stronger creative ideas and executions. And probably one other thing I might add actually to this, in terms of this, you know, how you achieve boldness is, and this again was a similar sort of characteristic of the teams that worked on both the Snickers and the Flora campaigns, is we're optimists, right? We're fundamentally wanting to make the world a better place. Now, it's obviously very different if it's the world of snack food. That's a treat category, but it's sort of bringing smile to someone's face when they feel like they want a treat. In the world of food and mainstream food, we want to make the world a better place because fundamentally we believe the food system needs to change, and we're optimistic that we can lead the charge. And we want to be the people that are making the running in the category. And I think I'm probably stealing that quote from Peter Field, I think he's the one who talks about that you want your brand to have that confidence and authority in the sense that you're making the running in the category. That's certainly true for us at Flora, and it was also the case for Snickers.
You guys have mentioned the importance of collaboration, how collaboration is key between different partners, so agency, brand partners especially. What is the best way to nurture a strong brand agency relationship, and how crucial is that chemistry in producing memorable, impactful work?
So I think, as we've touched on already, I think it starts with, the agency client relationship is almost for me, it's one team. That will sound like a cliche, right? But I think the moment you think, you know, it's not helpful to think of agency client relationship. This is a team relationship. So it's like any high performing team. How do we build it, right? So if you were working in your team, in your business, what are the things you would be doing to build a high performing team? What are the things you would be doing to build trust? How would you be communicating? How would you be showing up to meetings? How would you bring positive energy to those team environments? For me, it's exactly the same when you've got one team working on a creative development or a media campaign or asset creation or whatever it may be that you work with external partners on. It's still one team, and I think the principles are still very much the same. It's about high performing teams and how you start with that clarity of purpose that high performing teams have, clear ways of working, bold ambition, and how you show up together always and show that kind of energy and that respect. And when you do challenge each other, it's done from a position of respect and it's constructive. So that would be some of my initial thinking on that. I'm keen to hear Natalie's view, of course, on this.
I mean, I have a personal view, but I also have a view that I've been living while kind of being at Seltzer for 6 years, and we're in a very fortunate position where we can be agency agnostic, right? We're software, at which point when brands do bring us in, they're bringing us into the fold and we are working with one of their agencies, several of their agencies, their entire ecosystem. It might, you know, and we're also having to work very closely with their media agencies because of course we're fulfilling those pans and they're needing to distribute the creative. And what we find is, and it's not at all different actually, Ian, to exactly what you've said, which is bringing everyone to the table so everyone understands what is the shared goal, right? And if everybody understands what the intention of the partnership is, then I think everyone then understands their role within that, then you contribute and the sum is always going to be greater than a single part, right? And I think like that is really where it's important when you're bringing a technology into that, actually, you know, that single team entity that is working so well together. How do you kind of insert technology without creating mass disruption, but actually just amplifying and supporting what everybody needs to do? And, you know, we'll often talk to creative teams who are trying to say to them, creative automation doesn't dilute the idea, quite the opposite. We're here to safeguard your branding and your, you know, your concept. It's not there to dilute it by any means. Leverage it. Think about how it can kind of help you. So you're spending more time on the ideation, on the concepting, on the refining, and less time on actually just what is the creating many, many, many versions that are required for, you know, 12 markets or and 12 languages, et cetera. And it's pouring more time into the creative outside of the platform and then letting the platform itself do the automation piece. I would say on my personal perspective on just having spent 15 years in creative agencies and working directly with brands, I would say that at the core of it's exactly what also Ian has said, but it's about trust and honesty. And I think that that's really how you get to great creative work and respect. And I think that, whenever I was at any award ceremony and you saw these great creative ideas winning, you actually could very quickly also see that partnership that existed between the agency and the client and that mutual respect and understanding of, again, that shared goal that they were trying to achieve. And I think that's when the magic happens.
I think there's some things as well that you need to make sure to support that high performing team. You need to have brilliant basics as well, right? It's incredibly frustrating if you have issues over purchase orders and invoicing and those types of things, right? Which it may seem like a statement of the obvious, right? But it is always worth just investing the right amount of time to make sure that's set up correctly, so that you're raising the purchase orders, you've got a clear process to make sure it's all working and people are going to get paid. I don't want to dwell on it, but I think it's the sort of thing that can be a stone in your shoe, right? If you don't get it right and you don't need it. So do all the great work, build a high performing team, engage each other, have fun, challenge each other, but just make sure you're not going to mess some of the admin up, right? Because that can really take the energy out of the room. That can take the energy out of the room. So just don't let it happen.
It's been a fascinating discussion with you guys today, but sadly, we're coming to the end of this episode of Marketing Bites. But before we go, I would love to get your opinions on how best to fight the dreaded ad fatigue.
That's an easy answer for me because I'm going to say creative automation. Again, I think it's another stat that we came across from DigiDay, which was about, I think that in 2025, 60% of marketers are pointing to ad fatigue as being one of their main challenges. And I think the conversation we've had this morning, ad fatigue is actually just one of the many other challenges that I think any marketeer is going to be facing. But I would say that with creative automation, you are certainly making that job a lot easier, and you're doing it with maintaining your creative idea.
Yeah, I will definitely take Natalie's creative automation and raise it with strong idea, which I think you've also said, Natalie. I think, look, a strong idea makes everything work harder, right? And let's be really honest. Under 40s in particular, I mean, I think all people, but under 40s in particular, are incredibly marketing aware, incredibly advertising savvy. They get what we're trying to do, right? So, at the very least, be interesting, playful, intelligent, engaging, right? And that's the strength of the idea. And then do all the right things to optimize it and benefit from creative automation and learn, build the idea as you go. We've talked about some of the testing we did, and maybe a metric to just leave you with is that, on some of our metrics, you can get up to sort of 17 percentage point difference on some of our performance metrics, view through rates, for example, just with small changes to creative. So always be curious around what really works, what's at the heart of this creative idea that's working, and how do we optimize it, and stay bold.
Ian, Natalie, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you to our listeners. We look forward to you joining us on the next episode of Marketing Bites.